Basically, a D-notice was an arrangement between the government and the media not to publish some information that could be deemed a threat to national security. I instanced one at the beginning of the program, and that was the location of the Petrovs, our Russian spies. Now, no one talks about D-notices these days. Instead, it's all about certificates, non-disclosure certificates, conclusive certificates, suppression certificates. And the reason there's a lot of interest is because of the use of certificates in two cases. One, a French multinational affairs manufacturer directly lobbied the AG to prevent publication of report by the Auditor General. And then there's the ongoing litigation we've covered before on LNL on the East Timor bugging scandal, the court case involving lawyer Bernard Cotteroy and Witness X. Now, certificate mania is a worrying trend to those concerned about transparency and accountability in government. Daniel Stewart is a senior lecturer in law at ANU, and he's written widely on changes in legal approaches to accessing government information. He's in our Canberra studio, and we welcome him to our little wireless program. Daniel, non-disclosure certificates, a recent phenomenon?
Thanks, Phil. Not really. You mentioned the D notice. Apparently, there are still some D notices that are, you know, sort of hanging around, as it were. So, I thought the other day that the D notice had well and truly, the era of the D notice had passed, but they're still sort of hanging around. But the last of them were issued back in 1984, apparently, but never officially quashed or removed, as it were. But that's around about the timing that the use of certificates, and particularly their expressed provision in legislation providing for the use of certificates by ministers such as the Attorney General, began to become more of a more widely used.
Daniel, can you explain to me whether all certificates are equal? That is, a conclusive certificate, a suppression certificate, a non-disclosure certificate, or are they? Do they have a widely variable clout?
Oh, they certainly very, very, very widely. So it used to be the case that you would have, whether it be through a D notice or simply a certificate issued by a minister during a course of court proceedings, certifying that particular information went to issues of national security or defence or otherwise prejudiced the nation. And that general capacity to certify to an issue of public interest has gradually been overtaken by a very large number of legislation-specific, context-specific provisions providing for certificates in different situations. And so there are similarities in the sense that many of them are tied to a decision by the minister in question that the information in question does go to an issue of national security or will be prejudicial to Australia's defence.
Daniel, I'm intrigued by your suggestion that if you linger on, I was witness to a couple of incredibly loud tantrums involving Packer, Trevor Kennedy and Douglas McNichol over D notices, with the focus in that case on Petrov. What might be left?
Oh, well, I think it's, you know, the days of the media, in a sense, agreeing not to publish information on the basis of an agreement with the government. I think that those days have long passed. Certainly the legal position of ministers being able to certify to potential prejudice of information being released, that's now a very much a legal affair, depending on, you know, legislation and the precise wording of certificates and their scope being examined and subject to scrutiny. And so I don't think we can sort of if ever, sort of hark back to the days where there was, an agreement between the different media organisations and the government as to the appropriateness of disclosing certain information.
In introducing you, I used the term AG a bit loosely. So now let's clarify, because we're dealing with two different AGs. How unusual is it for the Attorney General to prevent publication of a report by the Auditor General?
Well, apparently it's only happened twice. And so the scope for the Attorney General to issue a certificate requiring the Auditor General to redact or otherwise withhold from publication certain information, that was, it's only been done sort of twice now, and most recently in the situation of the Auditor General redacting information in relation to the Hawkeye mobile vehicles that's just sort of still working its way through the Parliamentary Joint Committee on Public Accounts and Audits, and we're still sort of getting to the background of exactly what's happened there. So it's not something which has happened very often at all in that sense.
What do you think of the tactics of the defence contractor both lobbying the Attorney General and launching a court case against the Auditor General?
Well, I think the military contractor probably felt they had a lot to lose. If the full opinion of the Auditor General was released, potentially, we don't know. We don't know exactly what the full statement might have been if it had been disclosed. We don't know exactly how prejudicial that would have been to the commercial interests of the military contractor. We just know that in the opinion of the Attorney General, it was unfairly prejudicial and warranted the issue of the certificate.
The Auditor General has expressed his anxieties to the Parliament.
He certainly has. So he's called for a range of sort of reforms to be considered by the Joint Committee, questioning whether or not it continues to be appropriate for the Attorney General to issue a certificate in circumstances where there may not be as much scrutiny or the capacity of Parliament to scrutinise the decision of the Attorney General that there may have been accepted in the past.
I want to now look at something I know is of considerable personal interest to you. Considering there are so many areas of government which are now contracted out to this or that private organisation, should we change the rules about the protection of commercial information?
Well, I think, yes, that the difficulties with protecting commercial information is that it can be one of those areas that is difficult to judge. You know, there are hard lines to be drawn, and often the different interests involved may be highly dynamic. You may have a situation where you're not concerned perhaps with the commercial impact on a particular decision, but you're worried about future decisions, future contracts, future opportunities to tender, and what happens if it becomes widely known that information may be disclosed in those circumstances. And so I think that the breadth of discretion given to ministers, for example, in issuing these sorts of certificates, the inability to really look behind some of these decisions on commercial in confidence means that we don't have a lot of information about what would the long-term effects be if we allowed more information to become publicly known.
LNL on RN, on the ABC Listen app, and wherever you get your podcasts. My guest is Daniel Stewart from the ANU College of Law, and we're discussing certificates, not nice awards, but certificates that censor government information, and as we're about to hear, court cases. Let's go back to Witness K. Last week, a magistrate in Canberra rejected an application for an open hearing in the Timor-Leste spying case. This also involves the Attorney General issuing a non-disclosure certificate. A similar kind of suppression?
Similar in the sense that it involves a judgment by the Attorney General as to the potential impact on national security, in this case for the if the information was disclosed in a court case. Different in the sense that there's a fairly robust process in place providing for the issue of the certificate, but importantly, the testing of that certificate by the court and its long-term consequences for the conduct of, in this case, a criminal proceeding.
So in the Witness K case, it's a total blanket on proceedings, and even the lawyers for the accused can't access what the prosecution has.
Well, that's the potential, yeah. So at this stage, we've just got, so under the, I think it's the National Security Information Criminal and Civil Proceeding Act, but rather a mouthful, but it provides for a process where the Attorney General has to be notified if there's a potential for national security information to be disclosed. They then have the option of issuing a certificate. Once that certificate is issued, then there has to be a hearing, a closed hearing held. And it's only people who have the requisite security clearances that may be able to be involved in that closed hearing. And that, as I understand it, doesn't include, or may not include at least, the lawyers for Bernard Cleary and Witness K. So it means that, that's right, they're shut out of that crucial hearing as to what the conduct of the matter will be from then on. How much information is going to be made available to them? How much will be made publicly available? What witnesses could be called, what they'll have access to and be able to disclose to the court and otherwise.
Daniel, in 1980, there was a very famous example of disclosure of government information, legally known as Commonwealth versus John Fairfax, but known to me as Documents on Australian Defence and Foreign Policy, 1968-75, as published by George Munster and Richard Walsh. Oddly enough, like the Witness K case, it involved East Timor.
Yes, indeed. And so that's just an example of how in the early 1980s, we see a sort of a change in approach, a change in attitude, in that case by the courts, looking at the legal position of the ability of government to withhold information. And so the Fairfax case is an example of where Justice Mason, as he was in that case, was prepared to look behind the claim that release of information would be prejudicial to international relations, particularly in that circumstance, and to say, well, you know, the government needs to support that. The government needs to be able to demonstrate why the particular information sought to be withheld would be so prejudicial.
Daniel Mason wasn't convinced that mere embarrassment to our foreign policy was enough to justify this sort of protection of confidential information. Could not a lawyer succeed with that argument now?
Well, embarrassment, I think, is a sort of a proxy for to what extent are there decisions being made for what we might consider sort of partisan political interests as opposed to sort of public policy interests. And there is, I think, acceptance that that's not the purpose behind these certificates, but the ability to really draw the line between those two things is, I think, increasingly difficult. And so the breadth of discretion given, the width of some of these provisions, the uncertainty about what might constitute national security or commercial unfairly prejudicial to commercial interests, it means that there's plenty there for lawyers, and I'm not commenting on these particular cases, but there has been a concern in the past that it means that information which might be embarrassing might also have some commercial elements to it, but because of that embarrassment, it's being looked at a little bit more closely perhaps than it otherwise might have been.
So, Daniel, it's getting harder to access information these days.
Well, I mean, we've come a long way. You look at the situation prior to the enactment of the Freedom of Information Act. We've got some whistleblower protection, at least in the private sector. We're starting to talk about integrity commissions, anti-corruption commissions. So I think we've made some tremendous gains. We don't have blanket exemptions for conclusive certificates under the Freedom of Information Act, but we've still got a wide range of exemptions. and the way in which they're put into practice, the decision to issue certificates, whereas in the past they may not have been issued or they may not have had sort of similar circumstances arise, means that, you know, we have to be concerned, I think, about whether or not we're starting to see a degradation of our ability to get access to information.
Daniel, thanks for that. Daniel Stewart, Senior Lecturer at the ANU College of Law.